Hi, I'm Derek Jensen. This is Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network. My guest today is Charmaine Whiteface. She's a coordinator for an environmental organization called Defenders of the Black Hills. She's also an elder of the Oglala Band of the people who speak the Lakota language of the Great Sioux Nation. She's a spokesperson for the Sioux Nation Treaty Council, which advocates for the enforcement of the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty. Today, she'll be talking about a recent trip to Washington, D.C., where she spoke about homegrown radioactive pollution covering the United States. So first, thank you very much for being on the program, and thank you even more for your work.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Derek.
What did you talk about on this recent trip, and what's going on with the radioactive pollution?
It was a delegation of people from up here in the northern Great Plains, because I live here in Rapid City, South Dakota, but also some from the southwest, from Utah, New Mexico, and Arizona. We are all from indigenous nations. There was Navajo and Acoma from the southwest, and up here we were from the Great Sioux Nation. Now, we have, all of us, have been affected by the radioactive pollution. We thought primarily from uranium mining. And this has gone on for at least 60 years in both of our areas. Most people don't know about up here in the northern Great Plains. This is the state where Mount Rushmore is. And just 40, 50 miles from Mount Rushmore, there are 169 abandoned open-pit uranium mines in South Dakota. But just a few miles further west, there's over 2,000 in the state of Wyoming. Now, for us, people of the Great Sioux Nation, why this is so important to us is because all of this area comprises the 1868 Treaty Territory, and we work to help protect the environment of this Treaty Territory, even though, you know, we have a conflict with the United States over this. Still, it's our responsibility to do the best we can to try to help the Mother Earth, all the plants, animals, the air, the water, everything, to be healthy. But our trip, our reason for going to D.C. was, we see this, you know, we know this is hurting us. We have studies that have shown up here in the northern Great Plains, the native people who live up here have the highest cancer rates in the whole United States. That's for all races. We have the highest cancer rates. And yet we also have our values as human beings, which means we need to warn everybody. So we call ourselves the Miner's Canary. Now, in England, way, you know, a couple hundred years ago in England, when they would mine coal, they would take, these were underground mines, and what we have up here are open pit surface mining. But when, years ago, how the miner's canary term came about was because in the old coal mines, which went underground, the coal miners would take a little canary inside of a cage down there into the mine with them. And then when the poisonous gases were getting too strong, the canary would pass out or die. And so we're calling ourselves the Miner's Canary because we already know, we have already are experiencing all the radioactive pollution that is causing us, especially up here, to have the highest cancer rates in the country. Radioactive pollution doesn't just come from uranium mines. That's the other part that our message is about. It also is laced in the coal that is used to heat houses and provide a lot of energy. The largest open pit coal mine in the whole United States is just about 150 miles west of where I live in Wyoming. It is called the Black Thunder Mine, and it has shipped out over 1 billion tons of coal. But the thing about this coal that comes from Wyoming is it is also laced with uranium and other radioactive particles. So our message we were taking to D.C. was everybody, everybody is breathing in air that has radioactive particles in it. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
And it's not just the air, it's also in the water.
Yeah, I was thinking digging up coal that has uranium in it and then burning it, what could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. When they mine the coal out here, and they do it in Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, it's all around us. In the mining process itself, when you surface strip coal mines, coal, you know, the dust also contains these radioactive particles. And what they do over in Wyoming is when they do it up north too in North Dakota and Montana, is they drill these deep holes, they put in some diesel and some nitrogen, and then they start it on fire. It's not as simple as that, but pretty much. And then they just, boom, it blows up. And the dust, you can see it for 10, 15, 20 miles away. You can see when they're blasting, you can see the dust. The air is all brown, and that dust contains radioactive particles. We breathe it in. It blows over, you know, it doesn't stop at state lines. It's blowing Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, keeps on going further east. But the thing about it is that EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, does not regulate or monitor radioactive particles in coal dust. And then when it gets to a coal-fired power plant, and we have a lot of them around here, or there are also a lot around on the East Coast and on the West Coast that burn this coal from the Northern Great Plains. So when they burn the coal in those coal-fired power plants, the smoke also emits these radioactive particles. So again, millions of people are breathing in this coal smoke, which contains radioactive particles, which the EPA does not regulate or monitor either. So in the coal mining process, and then later on when they burn the coal in coal-fired power plants, the dust, ore, and the smoke all contain radioactive particles that are not regulated or monitored by the EPA for these really dangerous things that we breathe in.
Let's back up a second. And
okay,
you talked about all these open pit uranium mines and then also these open pit coal mines. And I don't remember the exact numbers you gave, but can you give an idea of the size? When you say an open pit mine, are you saying, is this 10 feet across, or is this 100 yards across, or is this a mile across? How big are these mines?
Some of these mines are a mile across. The uranium mines. I'll start with the uranium mines, the abandoned uranium mines. There's one here close, not too far away from Mount Rushmore. Mount Rushmore, remember, is a national monument. It's the four faces. There's one that is close to Mount Rushmore that if you put it, how it was mined is kind of like a zigzag, but if you were to put those all side by side into a square, it would be a mile square. That's huge, huge. There's another one up in northwestern South Dakota that's probably 3 miles long by a half a mile wide. And, I mean, it's so radioactive. A nuclear physics professor came out and still, I mean, this is not covered up or anything, it is still emitting radiation, and she said it's four times hotter than Fukushima, the nuclear power plant disaster that happened in Fukushima. This one mine up in northwestern South Dakota gives off radiation that's four times as much as what's coming out of Fukushima. So there are, what we have found in our research is that there are more than 15,000 abandoned uranium mines, primarily in 15 western states, although I always have to ask, there is one abandoned uranium mine in Vermont. But most of them are in these 15 western states.
So when you say abandoned, mm-hmm. So the company came in and stripped mine, so destroyed the land, mm-hmm. and left a radioactive mess, and then either moved on or declared bankruptcy or became another company or something. Is this correct so far?
Right. And some of them were not big companies either. You know, they were just, this was in the late 60s and early 70s until before there were reclamation laws.
So what is, you know, I grew up in Colorado and we used to go up in the mountains all the time and we would see tailings from mines from the 1870s that still didn't have anything growing on them. So
right.
Is this, okay, so you drive out to a mine that was abandoned in 1973, say, or 1969 or 75, whatever, and what will you see? Is it recovering naturally at all, or what does one see?
No. You will see usually gray out here. You will see gray, like gray soil. And because we have badlands out here too, and you know, rim rock, some people get it confused. But once you see an abandoned uranium mine, you will not forget. You will see like it's like gray soil. Some places it will still be real soft, and you'll see a lot of erosion ditches or you know little erosion places in it. And there will be nothing growing. Usually nothing growing around it. It will look like a badland, but at one time it did have grass on it and it did have plants and everything, but now it doesn't. It looks like more like a moonscape, and nothing grows there. It's been, 40, 50, 60 years, and nothing is still growing there because it is too radioactive.
And so since the companies are long gone, what is being done for cleanup, and what is the relationship of all of this to the 1868 Fort Laramie Treaty?
Nothing is being done for cleanup. Nothing unless there is only, in South Dakota, there are 272 abandoned uranium mines. One of them is being slated for cleanup because of a lawsuit, but if that lawsuit didn't happen, that one would be just left wide open too. The worst part of it is a lot of these abandoned uranium mines have no warning signs on them. You could drive right in there. You could be walking in there. You wouldn't even know.
And a child, you know, when I was a kid, especially, I don't do this so much now, but when I was a kid, if I went anywhere, if there was any dust, I was in it. I was, you know...
Mm-hmm.
I was playing in the dirt. That's all I did when I was 5, 6, 7 years old.
Right.
So if you take if somebody goes out there and they have a child, this child's going to be eating dirt.
Mm-hmm. And being very, very exposed to really, really dangerous material that could change his DNA, could cause him to have cancer or some other autoimmune disease, even heart disease or diabetes. These can all be caused by radioactive pollution.
So,
when you said you were walking around in Colorado and some of those old mines from the 1800s, and there's still nothing growing there, it's possible that they were mining for something else, and in the mining process, they might have dug through uranium, especially in Colorado. Colorado, I know, has a real high number of abandoned uranium mines. So that means that there is a geologic layer of uranium. And so it's possible those old miners over 100 years ago were digging through the uranium, you know, the uranium layer to reach whatever other kind of ore they wanted to get to. This is a problem that is happening up in North Dakota in the Bakken oil field. And then I'll get to the 68 Treaty. Don't let me forget. The Bakken oil field is in North Dakota. For the National Geographic in March of 2014, I think it was, did a really good article, and you could find it online, showing pictures and everything of the Bakken. It's B-A-K-K-E-N, it's called. But what the article does not talk about is that in drilling for this oil, you know, as the drill goes down into the ground like a big, big corkscrew, and then it would pull up dirt and everything to clean out that hole where they want to put the pipe so they can pull the oil out. The dirt they were pulling up is radioactive, and because it goes through a lot of layers that contain uranium and all the uranium decay particles. So in the Bakken, they pull these up, and all this wasted dirt, then they collect it in socks. They literally call them socks, and they look like big athletic socks for giants, you know. They're big, white, long, tubular things, which they put all this waste dirt in. But it was radioactive, and it should have been taken down to a repository in Colorado, but that would have cost these companies like $10,000 a load. So rather than doing what they should have done according to the law, they just threw them out any place. They find an abandoned barn, fill it up with all these radioactive socks, and what has happened then is that as it rains and snows, a lot of those radioactive particles are getting into the watersheds, especially of the Missouri River. So they might not be getting into the air. They're still there, very radioactive. I would not want anybody to be going into those buildings where these radioactive socks are at. But it is soaking into the aquifers and into the surface water, the little creeks and streams that eventually wind up ending into the Missouri River. And then the Missouri River, you know, empties into the Mississippi, and then it goes on further down. When we first learned about all these things, these abandoned uranium mines, then we also did water tests on the rivers in western South Dakota and found that all of them contain uranium and other radioactive particles, so they're all polluted with radioactive particles, and then those empty into the Missouri River. How many towns and cities along the Missouri River do the people drink the water? Is that the water source for? The other thing we have found out in these years of work is that the EPA, again, the Environmental Protection Agency, does not regulate or monitor all of the radioactive particles in water. And one of the first decay product that naturally occurring uranium decays into is called thorium. And the EPA does not regulate or monitor thorium at all. Thorium, again, itself then will change into any number of other radioactive particles itself. Naturally occurring uranium goes through 14 steps before it becomes lead that's not radioactive, but lead is also poisonous to human beings and a lot of other living things. So it's a huge problem. And where you mentioned the 68 Treaty Territory, this is for us, the people of the Great Sioux Nation, this is our last homeland. This is our last place where we choose to live. My great-great-grandparents were at the signing of the 1868 Treaty. So it's not something that is very long ago or something that, you know, is not of significance to us. And so this territory and all of this information that I'm talking about the Bakken oil field and the abandoned uranium mines and all the coal mining in Wyoming, that is all taking place within our treaty territory. And we never gave permission for any of this. We receive absolutely nothing from this other than diseases caused by radioactive pollution.
So I want to jump to the larger scale for a second, even larger scale. And just as you're talking, I keep thinking, how much I hate the dominant culture. And I keep thinking about, you know, I've written, I don't know how much you know about my work, but I've written 20-some books about the dominant culture's attack on the natural world and attack on indigenous peoples. And, you know, I've written all these books and I cannot wrap my mind around how completely insane the dominant culture is. And I can't wrap my mind around how completely insane everything you're talking about here is. It's just not what you're saying, obviously, but how long does it take for uranium to decay into lead? I mean, it's like the half-lives of some of these are hundreds of thousands of years, right?
Billions of years.
Billions. So basically, what they have done and what they continue to do everywhere is to basically... So,
totally destroy the environment?
To destroy everything forever.
Right.
There's a line in one of my books, and I don't mean to go on about my stuff, but in one of my books I wrote about Bhopal, and there was a great line said by one of the activists working to try to help, activist doctors trying to help the people who had been poisoned at Bhopal. And one of the things he said has just, I wrote this like 20 years ago, and this has haunted me ever since. He said, no one should be allowed to make a poison for which there is no antidote.
Exactly.
And, I mean, I guess the reason I'm not asking specific questions right now is because everything you're saying is devastating me so much that I'm kind of speechless. So I'm just rambling. This is just appalling.
Right, it is, and I'm sorry that is so shocking, but that's why we have to keep telling the people. Because just like you said, you know, how many half-lives, you know, how long does it take before they become to a place where they are safe, and it's billions of years. What I tell young people is increase your spirituality. And that's the main thing that I notice between the dominant culture and indigenous cultures. In my culture, the Ocheti Shakoi, that's the name of the Great Sioux Nation. That's what we call ourselves. Ocheti Shakoi, in our culture, we don't even have a word in our language for religion because it is a way of life. It's spirituality. It is a way of life. It is understanding the spirit or knowing the spirit that is in everything. There is a spirit in the air. There's a spirit in the water. Mother Earth, of course, has a spirit. All the animals, all the insects, birds, everything, grass, trees, they all have a spirit. And learning how to live with the earth, that was how indigenous people lived before the dominant culture came. And so it is very sad, but we also, some of us who still try to practice our old traditional values and live our old way the best we can, we still feel a strong responsibility to warn people. I am a human being, and so I will warn others, this danger is here. What can we do about it? We can do the best we can, but above all, we need to be ready every day for when they come after us. And when I say they come after us, I mean the spirits, the angels. We have a word for angels, too. We knew them. And increasing our spirituality. How could someone hurt the earth as bad as they have, like drilling for oil, without understanding who she is altogether? What is oil to her? What part of her does that, what function does that provide? What function does uranium provide to the earth? How dare us do this? How dare these companies, I'm not going to include myself in there because I can't stand it. How dare these companies frack? How dare them drill? How dare them mine and take out all these things that need to be left in the ground? They're there for a reason. We understand so many things from a spiritual perspective, and that's what you asked, or you're wondering, how could the dominant society do such horribleness? Some people say greed, some say lust for power. I say lack of spirituality. The whole United States needs to increase its own spirituality. Go to church. If you go to church, fine, but don't just do it for 1 hour a week. Really think about what your spiritual beliefs are and really try to live them. Be prepared. When I was a little girl, my grandma told me, then when I was little, and because she would be braiding my hair, and I have a very tender head, so I hate for anybody to be touching my hair. And so she would say, you have to be ready, always. Every second, you have to be ready. You don't want to go to the other side looking messed up, looking messy, she would say. You know, you don't want your hair to be looking like a tumbleweed. So you have to be ready every instant to, when they come after you, to go to the other side. She was teaching me about spirituality and about being ready to die. And that's what, I guess, my whole message now, even though I talk about all this horribleness that is here, is for people to increase your spirituality, increase your, if you are a Christian or Muslim or Jew or Hindu or Shinto or whatever, practice it more. Practice it more. Have yourself already, always ready. Suicide was not, we did not do that at all. Suicide, because there's always miracles. And you never know, who are we to question what the plans of the Creator are. The Creator who created innumerable universes. How could I say I might be smarter and I know what to do about my life? The Creator who created innumerable universes knows 1,000 times more, millions, billions times more than I do, what would be best for my life. So I try to keep my spirituality. I try to be on good terms with all the spirits and be ready, be ready.
And how does the one of the many things you've said that I've really loved is you said that you are a human being, and as such, it is necessary to warn people about what is about this uranium in this case. And I love the fact that it is implicit in being a human being that you must speak out against these atrocities, and that you must act in defense of the Earth and non-humans and also humans.
Yes. That's the only way you're a human being. We're all here together. We are all here. We are all a part of this. That movie, what is that, The Lion King, and that song, they talk about the web of life. Well, we have a word. It's the ending for usually when we pray. We say, all my relatives. In our language, we would say, Mitakuye o Yasi. But it means all my relatives. It has many, many meanings to it. More than just all my relatives, but it recognizes our relationship. When we breathe in oxygen. Just because we don't see it, doesn't mean it's not there. At the same time, we might be breathing in radioactive particles. And even them, even though they will cause us a disease, they are still our relative. It's not their fault that they are floating around in the air when they're supposed to stay in the ground. That came from the mining companies, you know. And so when we recognize that we have a relationship with everything, the air, the water, the land, the animals, the plants, those stones, everything, then that's when our spirit starts to grow. We can start realizing that, oh, whatever I do here is going to have an effect.
So once people start to recognize, once people start to recognize that we're actually living on a living Earth.
Right.
And let's go back to the coal mines and the uranium mines. What do you, in addition to letting people know what's going on, what do you want to have happen in the physical world? What do you want to have happen with the mines that have been abandoned?
We there is an organization called Clean Up the Mines. If you would, go on the internet and just type in Clean Up the Mines, you'll find it. Or see cleanupthemines.org, www.cleanupthemines. That one is specifically, we have written a bill, and we are wishing that Congress would pass this bill, and it's just to clean up the abandoned uranium mines only. There needs to be an amendment to the Clean Air Act so that all radioactive particles are included in the Clean Air Act, whether they're coming from coal mining or whether they're coming from a nuclear power plant. The Clean Air Act needs to say all radioactive particles. There needs to be an amendment to the Clean Water Act. Again, the same thing, because the Clean Water Act does not include all radioactive particles. So there needs to be an amendment to that one, too. Now, those are just three things, cleaning up the abandoned uranium mines, and then helping with the air and the water. Those are just a part of it. But the problem is so huge. Those are things that, to me, whenever I talk to a congressperson or a senator or his staff, or her staff, and they get it, they get what our message is, that makes me feel good and makes me know that that part of my I'm trying to do is getting done, is letting people know what needs to happen. Now, if there is a congressperson or senator out there who works very hard to either get these amendments through or to get the Clean Up the Mines Act passed, that's excellent, because that shows spiritual growth. That shows spiritual growth. But like you said, the half-life for some of these are in the billions of years. Are we too late? Is it too late? I don't know. I also believe in miracles. So this is what I do, is I'm just a miner's canary trying to warn people about this. And then whenever people become active trying to make the environment better, trying not to hurt the earth, that's how, is through actions that your spirit grows, your soul grows, when you care about something other than yourself.
This is all really, everything you're saying is so important. And let's say that there was an amendment passed to clean up, let's say, one mine that's a half a square mile or a square mile. What can be done actually at this point? What can be done physically, completely tangibly? Like, you were given $1 billion or some amount of money to clean up one of the mines. What can you actually do at this point? Would you cover it back over? What actually would the cleanup involve?
Right. You would have to cover it back over, and it would cost way more than $1 billion. But it would have to be covered. I learned about one mine that was actually totally, completely, perfectly cleaned up in Germany. And that one mine cost $50 billion, but the people had the will, and that's where else it comes from. Do the people want to clean up all these mines, or do they want to continue to let the environment be destroyed? That, again, goes to that. It's the will. It's the spirituality part of it. But, yes, they can be cleaned up. There are ways to do it. It means putting so much cement and so much dirt and so many things on top of that mine, covering up the radioactive emitters.
And
it is possible. Physically, it is possible.
You know, and one of the ways I think about this with uranium is that uranium, I mean, what would happen if you walked out, if you walked up to a bear? Like, I see bears here every day. I live in Northern California. I see bears literally every day. And I love seeing them, and they do live their life, and I live mine, and we all get along. But what would happen if I walked up to one of the bear cubs, and I picked it up, and I squeezed it real tight, and I started to hurt it? It would lash out at me. And I think of that, of course, and the mother would not be very happy either. And I think about that in terms of uranium, that uranium was perfectly happy underground. And when it is making people sick, a lot of times I think about that like an animal who has been put in a place they don't want to be in. They're lashing out.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And the uranium in the coal and the uranium in the water are the radioactive particles in the water.
Part of the problem with the whole dominant culture, one of the things you said is it serves a purpose there. And one of the problems, the uranium serves a purpose where it is, and we know what that purpose is. And mm-hmm. one of the problems with the dominant culture is this belief that, you know, as you know, obviously, one of the ways white people were able to steal and are able to steal land from indigenous peoples is by believing that only white notions of land ownership count as living on the land. And there's this notion that only something that is – that the uranium didn't serve a purpose until somebody pulls it up and puts it into a bomb or puts it into a nuclear power plant. And the same with the coal. It didn't serve a purpose until somebody burns it. There's this idea that things only have a purpose when a member of the dominant culture uses them, as opposed to the salmon having their own purpose that's entirely their own, having to do with the forest. And the prairie dogs have their function, and the bison have their function, and the coal has its function underground.
Right, right.
Sorry, I'm just this whole thing makes me so upset. How big is your organization? Before we go there, how is your how are the local people responding to your efforts? I know that sometimes in some circumstances people will get really upset with anybody who rocks the boat. Do the people in the region want for these to be cleaned up, or do they not care? Are they apathetic? Do they support you? Do they oppose you?
It varies. The native people up here, a lot of them know about it because we have been, through our organization, we've been trying to let people know for years. We started in 2002, our little organization, and we're not that big. We only have 900 members, but anybody that wants to be a member, they just let us know. We don't have a membership fee or anything. We just, you know, we just do our best. Go to our website, defendblackhills.org, and about who we are. But you are where I live here in the Northern Great Plains. Oftentimes I call it the outback of the North America, because we here, I mean, like, I can trace back to the 1868 treaty from my grandma's grandma or from my grandpa's grandpa. You know, it's not that long ago. We natives here are the last ones with what we call the most recent white contact. I don't know if my grandmother even knew four or five white people. I don't know if she knew that many white people. So it's our contact here is very recent. I'm a scientist, and that is just, you know, Native women are not supposed to be scientists. We're supposed to be artists or do beadwork up here or, you know, something else. Or I'm a grandma, so I'm supposed to be staying home and doing all of that. But what now I forgot where I was going with this.
About local support.
And
the outback
here, up here, South Dakota has been determined by the U.S. Civil Rights Commission to be the most racist state in the whole United States. There is still a real strong Indian-white racism here. It's against Indians, us, Native American people. And so I can talk till I'm blue in the face and try to tell local white people about all the uranium here and all the radioactive problems we have here, and they're going to just totally ignore me. The other part is that these are all poor states, Wyoming, South Dakota, not North Dakota as much, or Montana, but they are still poor states, but Wyoming and South Dakota particularly. And they do ranching with cattle ranchers. So any job that can come around, any job, mining, whatever, then they're going to go for it. These are also very red states. So it's really difficult up here to have the white people really understand about all this uranium, all this radioactive pollution that is here, and that so much of it is starting from here and then spreading out to the rest of the country. So we have a difficult time, but we just still keep on trying to get the word out.
Even, I mean, they're opposing this even as it poisons their own children.
Right, right.
I remember reading something recently about fracking in Utah, that there's a cluster of stillbirths, and was first noticed by a midwife. And even the families who are actually losing their children are still very upset at the midwife for bringing this to their attention, because fracking is bringing jobs and bringing built them a really nice community center. And
right.
It seems to me that's
killed a messenger.
And that's the core of the problem right there, that you value jobs and a community center more than you value your own children's lives.
Right, right. Killing the messenger, yes.
So what
but the other part
of
that equation, the other part of that equation is, just like you said, what are the values? What are the values? Why would they prize a job over a child, over their own child? What are the values? Does that mean they have a bigger house and more cars and more things rather than their child, so they can keep that job?
Yeah. Well, and for me at least, a lot of it has to do with once the dominant culture has been able to separate people from the land, then the job can actually mean feeding the remaining children. And as opposed to, if your primary connection has been to the land, then you know that the land is where you get your food.
Right.
So we have about 5 minutes left. And what are some of the specific projects that you are, you know, we've talked about 15,000 abandoned uranium mines. We've talked about those, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act. What are some of the other things that you and your organization are aiming toward in the short term?
Are other projects, you mean?
Well, like, what I mean is what are you, the real question is, how can people help to clean up these mines? What do you want people in, whether it's New Mexico,
yeah,
or Nova Scotia, for that matter, what do you want them to do to help?
If the cleaning up the uranium mines, the abandoned uranium mines, is a really strong project, that one, on the website, they have the state, like Colorado, and it'll tell how many abandoned mines are there. There's also petitions. There are form letters. Get involved. Get involved. That would be the main thing I would say. Get involved. Look it up and find out what's going on where you live. Inform yourself. And then where you live, contact your congressman. But also where you live, what else can you do? And also find out, if where you live, is there an abandoned uranium mine near an elementary school? What can you do about it? How can you bring that to attention of everybody and, you know, living nearby, and what can you do about it? There's a lot of things people can do where they live. That's one of the reasons why we wanted this information to get out. 15,000 abandoned uranium mines in the 15 western states is just a tremendous amount. One abandoned uranium mine to me would be too much, but find out everything you can about where you live. You don't have to, you know, be worried about South Dakota or Arizona. They're in Utah. They're in Colorado. I think there's some in California even, abandoned uranium mines. That's just one issue. But going to clean up the mine site is a good thing to do, and there are other action things you can do on that site.
And let's put forward a future regarding the uranium mines that is almost miraculous, but not a complete miracle. So it's what is the sort of best case scenario that you would see for 5 and 10 and 15 years ago? From now, would it be that the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act have been changed? Would it be something larger? What would you like to see happen over the next 10 years?
That yes, both Clean Water Act and Clean Air Act amended, and that changing to alternative energy, the sun, the wind, changing to alternative, no more digging into Mother Earth, no more hurting her. One of the things that we do that also helps us is that we go to these sacred sites. A lot of these uranium mines were dug in sacred places. And we go to these places, we don't take young people with us, or children especially, and we pray. We have a little prayer gathering, and we pray, and we invite everybody to come join us. We just pray, and we ask the Creator, please give us the direction and guidance we need so that we can help heal the earth. What are we supposed to do? You know, human beings are the ones that have hurt the earth, so now human beings need to do their part to try to heal the earth.
Well, thank you so much. Can you give your website one more time?
Our website, www.defendblackhills.org.
Well, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for being on the program. I would like to thank listeners for listening. My guest today has been Charmaine Whiteface. This is Derek Jensen for Resistance Radio on the Progressive Radio Network.